Welcome back to Feminism Now, a podcast featuring leaders and activists who are on the front lines of the fight for constitutional equality, economic justice, and reproductive rights. I'm Christian F. Nunes, the national president of the National Organization for Women. And as you probably know by now, the theme of this season is women leading democracy. That leadership can take many forms, and one of them is pursuing economic justice. Civic equality for women and non-binary people can only come when we have economic equality too. That's why economic justice is one of NOW's core issues. Of course, we'd love to hear your thoughts. So please send us an email at feminismnow@now.org. And in the meantime, let's talk fair wages. Let's start with a question for our listeners. How much do you tip? Maybe you're one of those people who thinks 15% of the bill is just fine and 20% if service is great. Or maybe you tip 20% no matter what. It seems like an imposition asking for money on top of the money you already paid. Why does the U.S. have a culture of tipping in the first place? Their service industry, particularly food service, is sometimes called the nation's training ground. 63% of U.S. adults have worked in the restaurant industry, and 70% of those tipped workers are women. And yet, the federal minimum wage for tip workers is only $2.13 per hour. The restaurant industry has seven of the lowest paying jobs in the country. Many people working in food service are likely to need food assistance. In light of that, tipping begins to seem like a much more important conversation than just how much you're adding to the total of your credit card. Why don't tip workers make a living wage? To find out, I'm so happy today to talk to Saru Jayaraman. She's a co-founder and president of One Fair Wage, an organization fighting for all Americans to make minimum wage, no tips required. Saru, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So first, I would like to get started. First of all, can you tell us a little bit more about the One Fair Wage campaign and how that gets started? I know it kind of started around the time of 9/11. Can you tell our listeners more about that?
Absolutely. So on September 11th, there was a restaurant at the top of the World Trade Center Tower 1 called Windows on the World. On that morning, 73 workers died in the restaurant and about 250 workers lost their jobs. In that one restaurant, 13,000 lost their jobs citywide. And we started a relief center for workers first in New York, restaurant workers, and then all over the country, grew all over the country. And everywhere we went, workers would say, it's my wages, it's my wages, it's my wages. That's the problem. And when we looked at the government data, we learned why. The restaurant industry has been the largest and fastest growing private sector employer for decades, but it's been the absolute lowest paying employer for generations, dating all the way back to emancipation when the wage structure in the restaurant industry was created. And today, as a result of that legacy of slavery, we have a sub-minimum wage for tipped workers that is still just $2.13 an hour that affects a workforce that is overwhelmingly women, single moms, working as servers and bartenders in restaurants across America. So our mission is to raise all wages across the country and end these sub-minimum wages, like the sub-minimum wage for tipped workers, that forces a population of mostly women to have to tolerate a lot of harassment to get tips.
Thank you for sharing that information with us, Saru. I think one of the strongest statements you make when you talk about the history of tip workers and minimum wage is the history that talks about the legacy of slavery in that. And I don't think a lot of listeners know about that and how that has really gone back that far since emancipation and slavery. Could you tell us a little bit more about how that is directly tied to in our country to slavery and why this is still such a problem and shows the problem with parts of the structures of tip work and wages as we still see today?
Yes, absolutely. And it's also very good to talk about this history as the tail end of Women's History Month, because this, in my mind, is both a legacy of slavery and the original gender and race pay equity issue. So look, pre-emancipation until 1853, waiters in the U.S. were mostly white men, and they got actual wages, no tips. Tipping was not prevalent at the time. In 1853, they went on strike for higher wages, and in response, restaurants who didn't want to pay them more started replacing them with guess who? Women. And after about 10 years of the industry moving more towards women who they paid less to in 1865, after 1865, they started to think of an even better source of even cheaper labor, which was they wanted to hire newly freed Black people moving up from the South. There were two industries, in fact, that sought to do this. One was the restaurant industry hiring Black women, and the other was the Pullman train company hiring Black men. Both industries told these Black workers, you're going to only get tips, no wages. And in response to that, the Pullman car porters organized the first Black union in the United States and won the right to one fair wage, a full minimum wage with tips on top, in 1937. But the Black women in the restaurant industry never got that, because in response to the Pullman car porters organizing, the restaurants formed something called the National Restaurant Association in 1919 that is still around today and is led by the chains and has been arguing since 1919 that they shouldn't have to pay their workers, who are still overwhelmingly women, disproportionately women of color, 100 years later, they shouldn't have to pay their workers because customers pay their workers in tips and therefore they shouldn't have to. And that has resulted 100 years later in a workforce that is the lowest paid, the poorest workforce in America, and the, as I said, the highest rates of sexual harassment, because these women have to put up with so much to get tips. So it's important that listeners understand that the women we're talking about don't largely work in fine dining. That's actually a very small, tiny percentage. These are mostly women working in very casual restaurants and bars, IHOPs, Denny's, Applebee's, struggling with three times the poverty rate of other workers, using food stamps at double the rate, and as I said, experiencing the highest rates of sexual harassment of any industry in the U.S. because they have to put up with so much to get those tips.
You bring up excellent points, because one of the things I think is so very interesting when we think about this is truly like the fact that only the intersections between sexism and racism that we often talk about and see when we're talking about this struggle of oppression and discrimination, that once again, women and Blacks, you know, and brown people were always the ones who were the most oppressed and discriminated against, but often women of color, right, that continue to we see perpetuate in these systems. But also the fact that we're also seeing that there's also the degradation and the disrespect and the lack of integrity and dignity that's shown, what they have to deal with, you know, to even try to earn livings. And then they're still faced and still working, even themselves, below the poverty line a lot of times, just trying to earn a living. And we don't think about this. And they are often having to seek assistance even occur. And now we're seeing that there is even an increase in sub-minimum wage jobs. Why do you think that is?
So as long as the restaurant industry gets this exemption that they get to pay workers a sub-minimum wage, every other industry is going to want that exemption. They're going to want to be able to pay people $2 as well. So people keep asking, why am I tipping at the kiosk in the airport? Why am I tipping in a coffee shop when I never used to tip? Why am I tipping at this retail environment? And it's because more and more industries, as long as there is a sub-minimum wage for tipped workers, are trying to emulate the restaurant industry, introduce tipping, and drive their workers' wages down to a sub-minimum wage. So you're seeing the growth of sub-minimum wage workers as long as there is a sub-minimum wage. There are also other sub-minimum wages. There's a sub-minimum wage for workers with disabilities. There's a sub-minimum wage for youth in many states. There's a sub-minimum wage for incarcerated workers. That's another legacy of slavery. But the biggest workforce of sub-minimum wage workers is tipped workers. And unfortunately, that group of tipped workers is growing, because as long as we allow a sub-minimum wage for tipped workers, every other industry is going to want that exemption.
We've outlined the problems with below minimum wage, and we're going to talk about the solutions next. But first, it's time for Action Now, our podcast segment where I get to tell you about some of the important issues impacting women today. We're excited to let you know about our upcoming national conference, which will be held virtually from July 19th to July 21st. It's such a wonderful opportunity for all of us to get excited about now and find community with each other. This year's topic is Women Will Save Democracy, No Democracy Without Intersectionality. And we're thrilled to present speakers in the action-oriented workshops, and it's your chance to get involved. Oh yeah, and it's election year for the National Now Board. Go to nlw.org to register for the conference, and we hope to see you there. Join us at our meeting and help us take action now. And now, back to our interview. So tell me, we've talked about some of the major problems here with below minimum wage and tipping. So tell us exactly what is One Fair Wage doing to help fight back and to help change this in our country?
Well, we actually are experiencing an incredible historic moment that's actually one of the silver linings of the pandemic. You know, during the pandemic, things got really much worse than everything I've described. During the pandemic, workers reported that they couldn't get unemployment insurance because in most states they were told that some minimum wage was too low to qualify for benefits. Then they went back to work and they reported tips had gone down, sexual harassment had gone up. We had heard from so many women. I'm regularly asked, take off your mask so I can see how cute you are before I decide how much to tip you. And that those horrific conditions, also so many workers being asked to enforce COVID protocols on the same people from whom they had to get tips. Look, that resulted in 12,000 workers dying in the restaurant industry. Our industry was second only to healthcare in the number of workers who died. But second to dying, also, horrible, was just the conditions these workers faced and continue to face. So 1.2 million workers walked off the job, left the restaurant industry, said, I cannot put up with this anymore. And that mass exodus has led to thousands of restaurants raising wages to recruit staff. And 2022, we were realizing we're in such a historic moment. First time since emancipation that workers are resoundingly rejecting these wage structures en masse. We launched something called 25 by 250, where we're moving bills and ballot measures in 25 states, half the country, to raise wages and end sub minimum wages by the United States 250th anniversary, which is coming up in 2026. So we are moving currently bills in like 9 states, New York, Illinois, Connecticut, Maryland, just a ton of states, Hawaii, all over the country, California. But we're also on the ballot this year in 4 key states, Michigan, Ohio, Arizona, and Massachusetts. And being on the ballot with wage increases means that workers will have the opportunity to go vote themselves a raise this November. And so for anybody who's worried about, you know, this presidential election, this Senate election, which is, you know, pretty scary and pretty important, these initiatives are going to help drive out a ton of young people and people of color who have named in polls over and over again that the top issue that they are prioritizing this election is the rising cost of living and jobs with living wages. So we are putting these issues directly on the ballot so that workers have the chance to go vote themselves a raise.
Which is so important because when we're talking about what's directly impacting people, it's things like a living wage. When it comes to housing, when it comes to being able to feed your child or your children or your family or your parents or yourself. I mean, these are the things that are directly impacting you. So this is why One Fair Wage campaign is so important. And now is definitely supporting you in this campaign. And, you know, you can always call on me for this as well. And I know you had some successes, even, you know, in Michigan and some other states, and, you know, you've been in D.C. and, you know, and you continue to have some successes in a lot of places. So we want to continue to see some successes continue. So as we talk, we know also there's a push for federal, but what are some of the challenges that you're seeing here? I think we kind of know them, but can you tell us what those challenges are and what our listeners and our activists can do to help encourage the federal push for One Fair Wage as well?
In 2021, we had a bill moving when Biden first came into office called the Raise the Wage Act. It would have raised the wage to 15 and ended all sub-minimum wages for tipped workers, workers with disabilities, and youth. It passed the House. We almost got it through the Senate, but 8 Senate Democrats, along with all the Republicans, voted against it. And at that time, Senator Schumer said, you know, it's really the Restaurant Association that's blocking this. So two strategies to win. One is, the more states we can get to raise wages and end sub minimum wages, the less power the Restaurant Association will have at the federal level because they already would have agreed to it in a lot more states. One is to get this done at the state level. Lots and lots of states doing this is going to diminish the power of the Restaurant Association and get more senators to vote yes. And part of that state fight is that we have 4 states that where we put the issue directly on the ballot this year, Michigan, Ohio, Arizona, and Massachusetts, where workers, 3.5 million workers, will have the opportunity to go vote themselves a raise this November. And for all of us that are worried about this year's election, presidential, Senate elections, House races, and worried about voter turnout, young people and people of color have named in multiple polls that the rising cost of living and jobs with living wages are their top concerns this year, which should be of no surprise to most of us that are still experiencing the very high costs of living right now across the country. So people are really saying that's my priority. The ability to go vote yourself a raise means that you'll go to the ballot more so than you would for any candidate. And while you're at the ballot, data shows you're likely to go vote for somebody who supports that raise. And so Joe Biden has run on the issue in 2020. He's likely to run on it again in 2024. So there's a real opportunity for us to defeat Trump by putting these issues directly on the ballot and mobilizing lots and lots of people to go vote themselves a raise. But the second thing is we can continue to tell our federal legislators, stop listening to the likes of the National Restaurant Association and listen to the people. When you ask the people of America in pretty much any state, red state or blue state, should people get a living wage from their boss? The overwhelming answer is, of course they should. And when you ask them, should restaurant workers get a full minimum wage before tips? Most people say, what are you talking about? I thought they already were getting a full minimum wage before tips. So it's so popular. We just need to tell our federal legislators, we need to get this done. If you're in those states, please be in touch. We want to work with you to get the vote out. If you're not in those states, help us by either donating or you can still do phone banking from other states. But be in touch because we'd love to work with you.
Thank you so much. I think everyone, Saru has told us our call to action. That is to continue to push in our states to make sure our states are passing and raising the minimum wage. So then it gives more pressure on our federal government to also push and make sure that we get done in that place. So Saru, thank you so much for being here with us today. You have taught us all so much about history and what it takes to change the game. And we know that you are going to make sure, and One Fair Wage is going to make sure it gets done. So we thank you for your time. If you want to know more about the One Fair Wage campaign, where can they learn about that?
You can go to www.onefairwage.org.
All right. Thank you. And I look forward to seeing more action, everyone getting involved. And we are going to get that wage raised because everyone deserves to be able to live a sustainable and healthy life. All right. Thank you, Saru.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much, Saru. And there you have it. This is how we get involved. And this is how we get our issues on the ballot to help us change our lives. Thank you. And let's get the One Fair Wage passed and pushed. Thank you, listeners, for being with us as we use season 2 of our podcast to showcase people making a real difference to women and their allies in our democracy. Vox Topica.